They caught up with Ozark Jack Berlin and the rest of the escapees an hour later. It was only mid-afternoon, but the storm made the light low and gloomy, and it cut visibility to less than 200 yards. Berlin nodded when they told him of what they'd seen.
I figured the army wouldn't give up.
Up ahead, the trail they were riding could be seen passing between two walls of stone as it traversed through a small valley. Berlin began to point at different men as he gave his orders.
Billy, you and Moses and Wiley and Yesu take another 10 men to head off to the right. Get your horses up that hillock and out of sight. Then get the dynamite and gunpowder and plant some charges along the top of that cliff, under boulders and such.
Berlin reached into his saddlebags and handed Billy Bartlett a handful of cigars.
Yeah, get these going so you won't have to worry about getting the fuses lit when the time comes. Now, on my signal, light the fuses and get under cover. After the charges blow, step up to the ledge and use your rifles to pick off any survivors.
As Billy and the other men spurred their horses up the hill, Ozark Jack told the remaining men to do the same on the other side of the trail.
We'll box the bastards in, then pick them off one at a time.
Sergeant Guthrie was riding point, hunched over his saddle, trying to keep his mustache from icing over. It was no use. Even the bandana he had over his face was becoming coated with a layer of ice and slush from the frigid wind in his face.
Yeah, I knowed I should have quit when I had my 20 in.
He glanced back over his shoulder. His men were riding two by two along the winding trail, all hunched over just like he was. He knew they were in dangerous territory without being able to scout out the area ahead of the troops, but Lieutenant Pike was adamant that they make good time. He'd refused Guthrie's request to send a small party of men ahead to make sure it was safe to proceed.
Damn fool's gonna get us all killed.
When the trail turned around a corner and seemed to disappear into a valley between two rock walls ahead, Guthrie reined his horse's head around and trotted back down the line of troops to where Pike was riding.
Sir, I don't like the looks of that valley up ahead. It's a natural place for an ambush.
Pike raised his head and stood up in his stirrups to get a better look. He stared at the valley, then at the cliffs overlooking the trail.
I don't see anything, Sergeant.
That's the point, Lieutenant. We can't see nothing in this weather. Let me stop the men and send a patrol ahead to check it out.
You want me to stop the men out here in the open and let them freeze while you go traipsing up ahead to see if anyone's waiting to fire on us?
But, sir, there's...
No! Carry on, Sergeant. I think it'd be better to get the men into that valley where we may have some cover and let them take a break there. We can build some fires and warm up the horses and men and have some coffee before we move on.
Guthrie shook his head as he jerked his horse around. He hoped the outlaws were as dumb as his leader, or there was going to be hell to pay. Guthrie had moved ahead of the group again and was well into the valley. He looked up in time to see sheets of flame explode from both sides of the cliffs on either side of the men, sending boulders, dirt, debris, and tons of snow cascading down toward him. Without thinking, Guthrie dove sideways off his horse to land sprawled on his face in ankle-deep snow. He scrambled on hands and knees to get as close to the side of the cliff as he could, hunkering down between two large stone formations there.
Oh, shit!
Seconds later, he was buried under an avalanche of dirt and snow as blackness opened up and swallowed him. As soon as their dynamite and gunpowder exploded, Berlin's men moved to the edges of the cliffs ringing the small valley below. Putting rifles to shoulders, they waited for the dust to clear. Below them was a scene of unbelievable carnage. Men and horses were half buried under tons of rock, dirt, and snow.
You know what to do, boys!
Within moments, all movement in the valley had ceased. Berlin and his allies climbed on their mounts and descended to the valley of death below, holding their guns at the ready. They lit torches and held them aloft as they walked their broncs among the dead horses and men scattered along the valley floor. The outlaws were relentless, stopping momentarily to gaze down upon helpless soldiers before slowly taking aim and putting them out of their misery. Guthrie came awake. He managed to get his hands up to his face and clear a small opening so he could breathe. He shook his head, trying to remember where he was and what had happened to him. Felt like his horse was lying on top of him. He could barely move his arms. When he realized what had happened, he slowly began to dig his way out of the dirt and snow covered. He managed to get his face clear and wipe his eyes after about 10 minutes. It was full dark now, with no sign of any light from stars or moon. He was lying between two boulders under a pile of small boulders and dirt, hidden from view in the darkness. His body was still covered, and he couldn't get his hand down to his pistol when he saw several men riding around with torches in their hands. He put his face down on the dirt so they wouldn't see the whites of his eyes, and he listened.
Sons of bitches are slaughtering my men.
Still unable to reach his gun, he lay still when two horses rode within 6 feet of him.
We got all the guns and ammunition we can carry, Ozark.
Good. Hurry up and kill anyone left alive and let's make tracks. Colorado's waiting for us, Blue Owl.
They rode on out of sight, swallowed by the night. As Guthrie struggled to free himself from half a ton of dirt and rocks. By the time he was able to scramble out from between the rocks, all of the outlaws were gone, leaving behind 45 men lying dead in the snow, some still on horseback, their dead mounts beneath them. Guthrie walked among his men, tears stinging his eyes and freezing on his cheeks as he looked up the trail after the outlaws.
I swear to God, I'm gonna come after you and see every one of you bastards in the ground for what you've done here tonight.
Finally, he turned to the grisly task of searching each and every body lying on the ground to see if anyone had survived the ambush. He found Lieutenant Pike sitting with his back to a boulder, over 15 gunshot wounds in his body. His right leg twisted at an unnatural angle beneath him.
You were a damn fool, Lieutenant. But nobody deserves to die like that. Not even you.
After he made sure there were no survivors, Guthrie hunted down a horse among the few that had managed to survive and were scattered in the surrounding area. He got in the saddle and headed up the trail. Before he left, he made the rounds again of his fallen comrades, taking several extra rifles, a couple of extra pistols, and as much ammunition as he could stuff in his saddlebags. He also took as much food as he could carry, knowing it was going to be a long, hard ride through the high country and food was going to be scarce. He loaded the extra rations and weapons on the back of another horse and tied a dally rope to its saddle, using it as a pack horse. He intended to go after the outlaws until he had a chance to avenge his men. Sergeant Bob Guthrie was going to war, and he didn't intend to stop until he had killed every one of the men who'd slaughtered his friends. He'd heard the leader of the band mention Colorado as their final destination, and he was going to ride hard and fast and see if he could be there waiting for them when they arrived. Smoke and Sally Jensen were sitting on the porch of their cabin, enjoying the first cup of coffee of the morning, when Monty Carson approached on horseback.
Yo, the cabin!
Howdy, Monty. Come on in.
Morning, Sally.
Good morning, Monty. Would you like some breakfast or coffee? Smoke and I were just fixing to have some eggs and bacon.
That sure hit the spot, Sally.
After she'd gotten him a mug of coffee, Sally went back into the kitchen to fix breakfast while Monty and Smoke stayed on the porch.
What brings you way out here to the Sugarloaf so early in the day, Monty?
I got a wire from the mayor of a little town in Utah called Lode yesterday.
Lode? Nah, I don't think I know it.
It's a small mining camp, a few hundred miles from Salt Lake City. It's just up in the mountains there.
And what did this wire say that was so important you had to ride out here?
Seems there was a prison break at the Utah Territorial Prison a few days ago. Evidently, more than 30 of the most dangerous felons in the place managed to break out and make their getaway.
Uh-huh.
They proceeded to steal some horses and guns and made their way up to this little town. When they got there, they stole more guns and horses, lots of supplies, and headed up into the mountains after killing the livery owner.
And what's that got to do with us here in Colorado?
And the army sent men after them, and the man in charge asked the mayor of Lode to wire all the towns near the border in Wyoming and Colorado that the escapees might just head on down our way if they made it through the mountains.
And that won't be an easy task, with winter storms starting in the high country.
I know it's a long shot. We'll probably never see hide nor hair of them. But I thought I'd use the wire as an excuse to ride around the area and warn all the outlying ranchers to be on the lookout.
Well, I'm glad you did, Monty. It's been far too long since you paid us a visit out here. Sally was just asking the other day about how you and Mary were doing.
My wife's fine, Smoke, though her cooking don't compare to Sally's.
I heard that, Monty, and I intend to tell Mary what you said next time I see her.
Don't you dare, Sally. She'd have my hide if she heard that.
Come on in, you two. Breakfast is on the table and it's getting cold.
While they ate, Smoke told Sally what Monty had said about the escaped criminal.
Do you really believe there's any chance they'll come all the way down here before they're caught?
Nah, I don't really think so, Sally. I imagine the army will catch up with them before they get too far. In my experience, men in prison aren't smart enough to escape the army for long.
I hope you're right, Monty. There are a lot of folks living up here in the High Lonesome that wouldn't stand a chance against those kind of odds.
Don't tell me you're worried about all your old mountain men friends who still winter up in the mountains.
No, not at all. If they try to bother any of those old beavers, they'll find out they've bitten off more than they can chew. But since gold has been discovered up in the Rockies, a lot of miners have moved up there with their families. And most of them are pilgrims and don't know how to take care of themselves against a crew like these prisoners.
Well, probably won't come to that anyhow. Thanks again for the food, Sally. It was wonderful, as usual.
Give my regards to Mary.
I'll do it.
And let us know if you hear any more news about those men.
Will do. Adios.
Smoke moved to the door and got the gun belt off the peg next to it.
What are you doing?
I'm gonna ride on up to the north pasture where Cal and Pearly and some of the boys are mending fences. Might as well let them know to be on the lookout for any strangers.
Just a minute.
Sally took a platter of fresh biscuits, put them in a paper sack, and handed it to Smoke.
Take these with you. It's been a couple of hours since Pearly has eaten, so I know he'll be hungry.
Pearly's always hungry, but I'll take the sinkers. It'll give him an excuse to quit working for a while and eat.
The early winter storm was clearing, and a bright sun filled azure skies without giving out much heat as Ozark Jack Berlin and his men rode a trail down Blue Mountain toward the banks of the White River. Berlin held up his hand to stop his men as he pulled a map taken from the general store and load out of his saddlebag.
White River.
Berlin glanced up, peering into the distance to where he could see a scattering of buildings near the riverbank where a smaller creek branched off. Blue Owl walked his horse up next to Berlin.
You figure out where the hell we are yet, boss?
That looks like the White River, and that there smaller branch seems to be Douglas Creek. If that's so, then that town must be Rangeley, Colorado.
Don't look like much of a town to me.
It ain't. Probably just a bunch of miners and such trying to scrape a living out of the rocks up there.
Blue Owl pulled a pair of binoculars out of his saddlebag and put them to his eyes. They were marked U.S. Army, and he'd taken them off a soldier just after he'd put a bullet through his head.
I don't see no telegraph lines nor poles. That means they ain't heard about us yet.
Yeah, and this time of morning, most of the men are gonna be up in the mountains digging in their mines. Won't hardly be anyone left in town to give us any trouble.
I hope there's some women folk in town. Been too long since I had me a woman.
Well, ain't but one way to find out, is there?
Yeah!
The town consisted primarily of faded, clabbered buildings and wooden cabins arrayed in a straight line on either side of the main street. There was an assay office, general store, three saloons, a two-story hotel and boarding house, a livery stable, 15 or 20 smaller houses on the outskirts of the town. As the 30 outlaws raced down the main street, several older men and a few women ran for doorways, ducking into buildings to get out of the way of the running horses. Two middle-aged men stayed in the street, both reaching for pistols. They never had a chance. Berlin jerked his horse to a stop in the center of town.
Fan out! Make sure there ain't nobody left armed till we can see the lay of the land.
In less than an hour, every living soul in the town was rounded up and gathered together in the largest saloon, called the Nugget. There were 22 men, ranging in age from 13 years old to more than 70. There were also 15 women, 10 of whom were obviously prostitutes or saloon girls. The other five were elderly women whose husbands were out at their mines working. Berlin stood at the bar, a bottle of whiskey next to him, as he looked over the prisoners, who were huddled on one side of the large room. The bartender was hurriedly pouring whiskey all around for the outlaws, while Moses Johnson and Billy Bartlett held shotguns on the prisoners.
Yesu, you and Sam Cook get on over to the SA office and see if there's any gold there we can take.
Yes, sir, boss.
Now, you people, just take it easy and nobody has to get hurt. We're going to take some supplies and be on our way soon, so no need getting all riled up and doing something stupid.
Ye bastards, you never get away with this.
An elderly man drew himself up and stared at Berlin.
And just who's gonna stop us?
When the men get back from their mines, they'll track you down and kill every one of you sons of bitches.
Billy, teach this man some manners. Now, are there any other complaints I need to deal with? Good. Then that settles it.
Berlin glanced out the window at the boarding house and hotel across the street. Then he walked over to the crowd and grabbed one of the women by the arm.
Get your friends and come with me.
Where are we going?
Me and my men have been on the trail for a while now, and we're in need of some feminine companionship.
The younger women followed him out of the door. He turned just before leaving.
10 of you come on with us. The others can stay here and keep them covered. We can take turns till everyone's had their fill.
Blue Owl grabbed his bottle and started toward the door.
No, not you, Blue Owl. You got to go last.
Why is that?
Because I don't want you and that pig sticker of yours spoiling the goods till everybody else has had a chance at them. Moses, get a couple men to stand guard the town limits in case some of the miners come back before dark.
Yes, sir, boss.
In 2 hours, all of the men with Berlin had their turns with the prostitutes, including Blue Owl. Only one of the girls was damaged beyond repair. Blue Owl had left his woman in pieces on a blood-stained bed in the hotel. Berlin gathered his men, along with 12 pounds of gold dust from the assay office, assorted food and supplies from the general store, and enough ammunition to replace what they'd used on the soldiers. They prepared to take their leave.
You people stay here in the saloon till after we're gone, and nobody will be any the worse for wear. If you stick your heads out before then, we'll blow them off.
With that, Berlin and his men rode out of the small town. Sergeant Bob Guthrie arrived in town 3 hours later, just before dark. He was met by a group of men holding rifles and shotguns.
Who the hell are you?
I'm Sergeant Bob Guthrie, United States Army.
What you want here?
I'm following a band of outlaws that killed my men up in the mountains. There's about 30 of them, and they're mean as snakes.
Get down off your horse, Sergeant. Your outlaws have already paid us a visit. I'm Jacob Walker, sort of the mayor of Rangeland.
Howdy. How long ago did they leave?
About 3 hours or so.
Walker led Guthrie into the saloon where the people had been held prisoner. Guthrie sank into a chair, exhaustion evident on his face.
I've been in the saddle over 20 hours now trying to catch up to those bastards.
Emmett, get Sergeant Guthrie some grub and some coffee. He looks like he could use it.
While he ate, Guthrie told the townspeople the story of the prison break, the trouble in Lode, and the subsequent slaughter of his command. Walker looked around at his fellow citizens.
Guess we got off lucky then. They only killed 4 here, along with stealing all our gold and some supplies.
You folks have a telegraph here?
Nope. Nearest one's over at Meeker, 60 miles to the east.
Which way did they head?
Southeast. Well, that means they're either heading to Rifle or Grand Junction.
How big are the towns?
Rifle's just about the same size we are. Grand Junction has a railroad line that's quite a bit bigger.
You say Grand Junction has a railroad?
Yeah, it goes over toward Crested Butte and then on down to Pueblo.
I figure they're gonna head for Rifle first, being it's the smallest town and probably don't have much law.
You're probably right.
If I can trade for a couple of horses, I'm gonna hightail it to Grand Junction, notify the army by telegraph there, then take the railroad down to Crested Butte. With any luck, I'll be waiting for them when they finally get there.
You don't mind my saying so, Mr. Guthrie. You don't look in any shape to make that journey tonight.
You're probably right, Walker. I'm liable to fall off my horse and break my neck if I don't get some sleep.
From the looks of the sky, we got another winter storm coming in soon. Those outlaws won't be able to make much time over the mountains between here and Rifle if it snows. Why don't you get some sleep and start off first thing in the morning? That'll still give you plenty of time to get to Grand Junction and get the train to Crested Butte ahead of those outlaws.
I think I will, Mayor. I'm much obliged to you.
You get the men who raided this town, we'll call it even, Sergeant.
Oh, I intend to do that, Mr. Walker. You can count on it.
Sergeant Bob Guthrie awoke at noon the next day to weather that was cold but with no traces of the storm of the previous week. The mayor of Rangeley provided him with two fresh horses and he took off toward Grand Junction, a trip of approximately 50 miles. He planned to use the horses in tandem, and he hoped, if the weather held, to make the trip in 3 days or less. Ozark Jack Berlin and his gang of outlaws didn't fare so well. A blue norther sweeping down out of Canada hit him with the force of a freight train, dumping 2 feet of snow and dropping temperatures below zero on their trip toward Rifle, Colorado. They arrived at Rifle more than 10 days after they left Rangeley, a journey that would usually only take 4 days. They were cold, saddle-weary, and dead tired when they rode into sight of the small mining town. While on the outskirts of the town, Berlin gathered his men around him, their faces crusted with ice and snow.
All right, men. We've been through hell on the way here. We're gonna need a place to rest up and recuperate from the trip, so I want y'all to be on your best behavior while we're here. No shooting and no killing till we're ready to leave town. You got that?
The men nodded wearily, all anxious to get in front of a fire somewhere and warm the hell up. Their bloodlust was for the moment dampened by their misery in the frigid air surrounding them. As they rode slowly into Rifle, Blue Owl looked around at the clapboard buildings and tents of the town.
Hell, boss. It don't look like there's much here for the taking anyway.
Yeah, that's true, Blue Owl. But I want you to keep a tight rein on the men while we're here. Ain't no need of getting the town all riled up till we've rested a mite and got our strength back.
You think they might have heard anything about us yet?
Nah, I don't see no telegraph wires. So there ain't no way they know anything about us so far.
The men reined in their mounts in front of the largest saloon in town, called the Mother Lode. They hurried through the bat wings, standing inside the door and stamping snow and ice off their boots before taking tables in the almost empty room. Berlin went over to the bar.
Bring my men whiskey and plenty of it. We're about frozen to death.
You men been out traveling in this weather?
We were on our way here from up north when the storm hit. For a while, we didn't know if we were gonna make it or not.
You're plenty lucky to have made it through the passes before the snow accumulated. Another day and you would have been trapped up in the mountains till the snow melted.
Billy Bartlett and Moses Johnson walked over, picked up the whiskey bottles and some glasses, and took them to the nearby tables. Berlin inclined his head toward the large Franklin stove in the corner.
You think you could stoke that stove a mite? We'd sure appreciate a little extra heat in here.
Sure thing. And if you and your men want some grub and a place to bunk down, the boarding house up the street sets a fine table.
Berlin nodded, pouring himself a large glass of whiskey.
Much obliged, mister. As soon as we get a little fire water in our gullets, we'll head on over there.
Livery's right next door, too. With this storm, it might be best to get your animals under cover as soon as you can.
We'll do that.
Berlin took his bottle and headed over to the table where Bartlett, Blue Owl, and Sam Cook were sitting.
What's the plan, boss?
I figure we'll hold up here a couple of days till the storm passes. We can use the time to get our mounts rested and our bellies full. After all, we ain't in no hurry to get anywhere since we took care of the army.
Guthrie rode into Grand Junction 3.5 days after he left Rangeley. He pushed his horses, both of which were on their last legs, and he rode directly to the train station on the eastern edge of town. He dismounted and rushed to the ticket window.
I need to get to Crested Butte as soon as possible.
That might be a bit of a problem, mister. Had a big storm go through the area south of here last couple of days. Some of the passes might be blocked with snow.
And when will you know?
Yeah, we're gonna send an engine with a snowplow on the front through this afternoon. If it makes it, the engineer will telegraph us from Crested Butte and we'll send the next train on ahead.
Any chance of me hitching a ride on that snowplow?
What's so all-fired important about getting to Crested Butte in such a hurry?
There's a group of 30 outlaws headed that way. If I don't get there first and warn the town, there's liable to be dead people lying all over the streets of Crested Butte by tomorrow.
Well, since it's kind of an emergency, I'll check with the engineer and see if he'll let you ride along. I gotta warn you, though. It won't be an easy ride, what with that cold and snow and everything.
I'll take my chances. A lot of lives depend on me getting through. Where's the telegraph office?
Right up the street there. You can't miss it.
Guthrie walked to the telegraph office and entered. He grabbed a sheet of yellow foolscap off the table and began writing a message to the army post at Glenwood Springs, 15 miles east of Rifle. He hoped they could send men to the small town in time to avoid a massacre if Berlin and his men headed there. Fort Collins, a much larger post, was too far away to do anything in time. Guthrie had been stationed for a short time at Glenwood Springs, and he knew it was a small post, but at least they might be able to warn the town of Rifle that Berlin was on his way. It was a measure of the smallness of the post at Glenwood Springs that the commanding officer was a shave-tail lieutenant. He was fresh from officer's training, and Glenwood was his first command. His name was Riley Woodcock. He was 22 years old, with a lack of experience to match his young age. Sergeant Mark Goodson was the real leader of the small command, and Goodson prayed nightly that nothing untoward would happen that would test his young commanding officer's mettle. It was Sergeant Goodson who got the wire from Sergeant Guthrie, and he was shaking his head as he carried it into Lieutenant Woodcock's office.
Yes, what is it, Sergeant?
Yeah, I just got a wire from Grand Junction, sir.
Goodson handed the paper to Woodcock. Woodcock read the wire, then laid it on the desk, a look of anticipation on his face. As much as Goodson prayed for nothing to happen, Woodcock had waited eagerly for some trouble in which he could act heroically and make a name and perhaps gain a promotion for himself.
What's the status of the men, Sergeant?
Ready, sir. It seems a small matter to occupy you, sir. Perhaps I could take a squad of men and ride over to Rifle and warn the civilian authorities there of what may be coming.
There are no civilian authorities in Rifle, Sergeant. You know that. If anyone is to save the good people of Rifle from these desperados, it's got to be the army.
Yes, sir.
Gather the men together in front of my office. Gear up and get ready to ride. Full arms.
Yes, sir.
30 minutes later, Goodson had 15 men sitting on their horses in formation in front of Woodcock's office. Woodcock strolled out the door, set his hat firmly on his head, and climbed into the saddle.
Sergeant, you may lead the men by columns of two off the post.
Yes, sir. Forward, ride!
Lieutenant Woodcock rode alongside halfway down the column, sitting straight in the saddle, sure he was on his way to finding his destiny. Ozark Jack Berlin was enjoying the first real rest he'd had since escaping from prison a couple of weeks before. He and his men had been on the run, sleeping and eating mostly on the trail, through some of the worst weather he'd ever seen. This was the first time he'd been able to sit back and take it easy since he'd been caught after robbing that train up in Moab, Utah, and sentenced to 10 years hard labor at the territorial prison. If he could only manage to keep his men in line and out of trouble, they might just stay here until the weather warmed up a bit. He didn't relish the thought of any more mad dashes through the mountains with winter storms beating him in the face. Still, There was always the possibility that someone would be on their trail. With this thought beginning to worry, Berlin got out of bed at the boarding house and walked down the hall to the room being shared by Jack McGraw and Tony Cassidy, two of the men who'd helped him rob the train that had gotten him prison time. A hungover and sleepy-looking Jack McGraw opened the door.
What the hell do you... Oh, it's you, boss.
I've been thinking, Jack.
Yeah?
We might just be getting a mite careless lately. There's an outside possibility somebody may be on our back trail. I think we ought to post a couple of men on the north side of town, just in case trouble comes looking for us.
Yeah.
You and Tony are going to take the first watch. I want you to station yourselves in that little saloon right inside the town limits to the north. If you see anybody that don't look right, you hightail it on over to the boarding house here and give us a warning.
But, boss, it's might near freezing outside.
I don't aim to make the same mistake got us caught last time, Jack. Now, you and Tony get your asses over to that saloon and go easy on the whiskey while you're on watch. Beer only, you hear me?
Beer's about all I can handle right now anyway, Ozark.
Get Tony out of bed and haul your butts over there. I'll send somebody to relieve you in time for lunch.
Yes, sir.
Sergeant Bob Guthrie was standing in the cab of the snowplow engine. He was sweating from the heat coming from the furnace as the engine slowly plowed through 3 feet of snow on the railway line between Grand Junction and Crested Butte. It had been slow going through the previous day and last night, with the mountain passes having accumulated snowdrifts 4 and 5 feet high. But they were getting close to breaking through to lower elevations where the snow wouldn't be so bad.
You think we'll make it by noon?
The engineer glanced ahead of the engine, shielding his eyes from the glare of the sun off the snow. Then he leaned back into the engine compartment.
I reckon so. This ought to be about the last of the heavy snow. From here on in, it's gonna get flatter, and that means we can go faster.
Good.
You never did tell me why you're in such an old-fired hurry to get to Crested Butte. There ain't much there to get all that excited about.
I got a date with some outlaws.
Hell, if that's all you're looking for, you can find them just about everywhere you look in these parts. But the only kind of men who'd come to the High Lonesome in the winter are either miners crazy with cold fever, or men on the run from someplace else.
Well, these men are the worst of the lot. They need killing in the worst way, and I intend to oblige them.
When the squad of army men crested a hill overlooking the town of Rifle, Sergeant Mark Goodson reined his horse to a stop and waited for Lieutenant Riley Woodcock to ride up next to him.
Why are you stopping, Sergeant?
I was thinking, Lieutenant, if those outlaws are already in Rifle, maybe we'd better split up the men and sneak into town one or two at a time. No need to warn them. We're coming after them.
I don't intend to split up my command, Sergeant. That's a mistake General Custer made against the Sioux, and it cost the lives of all his men.
But, Lieutenant, I've...
You heard me, Sergeant. Let's ride in showing the color at full force. Those outlaws have any sense, when they see the United States Army arrive, they'll give themselves up without a fight.
Goodson started to remind the lieutenant that they had not given themselves up the last time they faced the Army. Then he figured it wouldn't make any difference. The lieutenant had his mind made up, and he didn't appear ready to listen to reason.
Yes, sir. Man, make ready your arms. I want every one of you ready for trouble the minute we hit the town limits.
I'll take the point from here on in, Sergeant.
Woodcock spurred his horse to lead his men into the town.
Damn fool.
Goodson followed the lieutenant down the hill toward Rifle. Tony Cassidy was sitting next to a window overlooking the main street of Rifle, nursing a beer and eating boiled eggs when he saw the squad of army men riding into town.
Look at that, Jack.
McGraw turned his attention from the beer he'd been nursing and glanced out the window.
God damn, how many you make it?
Looks like, 17. And they're loaded for bear. Well, they got all their rifles at the ready.
You ease on out the front door and keep an eye on them. I'll sneak out the back door and let Ozark know what's going on.
You think they're coming after us?
He didn't ride through this weather to pick flowers, Tony.
McGraw ran as fast as he could, stumbling through 2 feet of snow on the ground until he came to the back of the boarding house where the rest of the men were staying. He pounded up the stairs and burst into Berlin's room without knocking.
What the?
Soldiers, Ozark. About 17 of them. And they're heading up Main Street as big as you please.
Get the rest of the men up and ready.
Within several minutes, the entire gang was gathered in the sitting room in the boarding house. Berlin began to give orders rapidly. He assigned 6 men to upstairs windows with rifles, and he told the rest to sneak out the door and spread out in the alleys fronting Main Street.
We'll catch dumb bastards in a crossfire.
As they walked their horses down the middle of Main Street, Goodson tried to reason with Woodcock one last time.
Let the men dismount and spread out, Lieutenant. We're easy targets out in the middle of the street like this.
Lieutenant Woodcock glanced around at the town. Hell, there were only a couple of miners visible on the boardwalks, and no horses were seen reined in front of the various saloons at this early hour.
I think we're wasting our time, Sergeant. I see no evidence of 30 men gathered in this town. Perhaps the outlaws were caught in that storm and haven't made it down out of the mountains yet.
Just the same, sir.
The soldiers' horses began to crow hop and jump under the onslaught of the fire from above, making the soldiers unable to return fire. Just as Goodson got his mount under control, men began to pour out of alleys and doorways on either side of him. Lieutenant Woodcock was hit in the left arm and stomach and blown off his horse. Goodson leaned over the neck of his horse, pulling his colt from its holster as he spurred his mount forward toward the men in the street. He was able to kill 2 of the outlaws before a bullet hit him square in the forehead. The last 4 soldiers managed to wound only 2 more of the outlaws before they were killed in the assault. Main Street of Rifle, Colorado was immersed in a heavy cloud of cordite and gun smoke when the battle ended, just 3 minutes after it began. The townspeople, showing good sense, remained indoors, not wanting any part of whatever was going on in their town.
Hey, Ozark! There's an officer here who's still alive!
Berlin strolled over to where Blue Owl was standing over a man with lieutenant's bars on his uniform. He squatted in front of Woodcock, who was holding his stomach.
Lieutenant, how'd you know we was here?
Go to hell!
I'm gonna ask you one more time, Lieutenant. Who told you we was here?
You wouldn't dare!
Berlin took aim at Woodcock's right knee.
You gonna answer me?
All right. We got a wire from an army sergeant in Grand Junction. He said you'd killed all his men and were headed this way.
Son of a bitch. We must have let one of those soldiers live back in the mountains.
Well, this changes our plans a mite. We got to get moving before somebody else gets on our trail.
You gonna finish this one off?
Nah, bastard will be dead in 5 minutes the way he's leaking blood all over the ground. Let him suffer long as he lasts.
Berlin looked down at Woodcock, who was watching blood pump from his shattered leg.
What are we gonna do now?
Round up the men, we're heading south.
As soon as the snowplow engine made it to the train station at Crested Butte, Colorado, Sergeant Bob Guthrie made his way to the sheriff's office. Guthrie entered the office to find a long, tall man, thin as a string bean, sitting leaned back in his desk chair with his boots on the desk and a steaming mug of coffee wrapped in his hands on his chest.
Howdy, mister. Grab yourself some coffee to ward off the chill and have a seat.
Guthrie slapped his arms against his chest, kicked snow off his boots, and made his way toward the coffee pot.
If you call this a chill, I'd hate to see what it's like when you say it's cold.
Oh, this is just a little fall storm. We won't get the real cold weather for another month or so.
Guthrie poured the coffee, which was so dark and thick he thought it could float a horseshoe, and then he walked over to take a chair in front of the sheriff's desk.
I'm Wally Pepper, and if you're looking for law in this town, well, I guess I'm it.
I'm Sergeant Bob Guthrie.
Well, we're a mite far from any army posts, Sergeant.
That's what I'm here about. About 2 weeks ago, 30 of the worst killers in Utah escaped from the territorial prison. Since then, the desperados have been making their way in this direction.
Pepper's eyes narrowed and his expression became more serious.
Along the way, they've slaughtered over 40 men in my command, along with an unknown number of civilians in Lode, Utah and Rangeley, Colorado.
You say there's 30 of these killers?
Thereabouts. Before I came down here, I wired the army post at Glenwood Springs in hopes they'd send some men to Rifle to see if they could stop the bastards before they killed anyone else.
Ain't no telegraph in Rifle, so I guess we won't know for a while if they managed to do any good or not.
That's what I wanted to talk to you about, Sheriff. If the Army failed to stop them and they keep on their same track, they'll be headed here to Crested Butte in the next few days.
And you think we ought to arrange a little welcome for these killers?
Yes, sir. They're all hardened criminals with nothing to lose, so they'll kill at the drop of a hat.
And I guess I can assume they're well-armed?
Rifles, ammunition, along with considerable amounts of gunpowder and dynamite. They've stolen all they need to go through this town like grain through a goose.
Well, we'll see about that. The miners in this town work hard for their money, and they ain't exactly gonna be thrilled at the idea of a bunch of prison rats trying to steal it.
I don't mean to push, Sheriff, but we may not have much time.
Hold on to your water, Sergeant. We got us a fire bell at the end of town. Come on with me and I'll ring the damn thing, and before you know it, the town will be full of men armed to the teeth, ready and willing to fight for what's theirs.
True to his word, in less than an hour, Sheriff Pepper had over 100 men gathered in front of his office, and about 30 women who looked every bit as hard.
Folks, the sergeant here tells us we got a gang of cutthroats and killers headed this way. They managed to make a mess of a couple towns on the way here, and the sergeant is worried they might do the same thing to Crested Butte.
One of the men, heavy set with arms as big around as barrels and a full beard, held up a short-barreled shotgun.
You tell that sergeant to step back out of the way, Sheriff, and watch us teach those bastards a lesson they won't soon forget.
Jacob, I'm glad to hear you say that. Why don't you and Billy Bob and Sammy head up on north of town and stake out the trail coming from Rifle? If you see those sons of bitches headed this way, you scamper on back here and let us know. Meanwhile, I'd suggest most of you stay here in town for the next couple days in case we need you. Now, I'm sure Sadie and the rest of her girls can use a little extra income. And to make sure everybody has a good time, drinks are going to be half price till those outlaws are killed.
The sheriff took Guthrie to a nearby boarding house and offered to buy him supper for taking the trouble to travel through the mountain passes to bring them a warning. Guthrie shook his head.
That's not necessary, Sheriff. Those bastards killed my men and my commanding officer. I intend to track them until either they're all dead and buried, or I am.
Well, vengeance is a powerful motivator, Sergeant. Just be sure it don't cloud your mind enough to cause you to make fatal mistakes.
Those banditos made the mistake, Sheriff, when they killed my friends. I ain't gonna rest till they're made to pay for what they done.
As they headed out of Rifle, Ozark Jack Berlin sent a half-breed Indian named Spotted Dog ahead to check out the trail. Spotted Dog had been a scout for the Army until the day he'd raped and killed a 10-year-old girl who'd wandered off the Army base. Luckily for Spotted Dog, he'd managed to get away from the post before he was caught. Otherwise, he'd never have lived long enough to be sentenced to hang. The escape from the territorial prison had come 1 month to the day before he was due to be executed. Spotted Dog was an excellent tracker and headed out ahead of the gang, staying off the trail so he wouldn't be seen by anyone who might be waiting for him. The gang was just rounding a turn in the trail when Spotted Dog came galloping toward him. Berlin held up his hand, halting his men, and sat waiting for Spotted Dog to arrive.
Ozark.
Yeah, what'd you see, dog?
There are several men ahead, waiting in ambush in rocks that look down on the trail.
How many you talking about?
I see four, but there may be more in the bushes.
They must have gotten word we was coming somehow.
You think it could have been that sergeant that officer told us about in Rifle?
Don't really matter who or how. Fact is, we got to change our plans now. If they got men on the trail out here, then the town's bound to be ready for us, too.
Berlin sat there in his saddle, thinking and smoking for a few minutes. Finally, his gaze lit on the railroad tracks off to the left of the trail, and he nodded.
I know what we're gonna do.
Berlin jerked his horse's head around and began to ride out cross country, having to go slow through the snow. Blue Owl rode next to him, the gang following along behind.
Where the hell you going, boss?
We're going to catch a train, Blue Owl.
Ozark Jack Berlin led his gang cross country, keeping the small buildings of Crested Butte, Colorado in view off to their left. He stopped occasionally to consult the map he'd taken from the general store in Lowe's, checking to make sure they were headed in the general direction the train tracks took when they left the town. little over 4 hours after leaving the trail, they crossed the track several miles from the southern limits of Crested Butte. Berlin followed the tracks until they made a wide turn around the small hillock. He reined his horse to a stop.
Blue Owl, take a couple of sticks of dynamite and blow that big maple tree down over there.
All right.
After the tree had been felled and was lying across the tracks, Berlin led his men back into a strand of trees and out of sight.
When's the train due?
How the hell should I know?
Well, should we make a fire and cook some coffee? About near frozen through.
Yeah, sure, but try and use old wood so it won't smoke so much. We don't want them to see the smoke over in Crested Butte.
The men managed to get their fill of hot coffee laced with whiskey before the mournful whistle of the oncoming train sounded about an hour later.
Mount up, men. We got us a train to catch.
When the train rounded the bend in the tracks, the engineer saw the tree blocking the rails and he hit the brakes.
Let's ride!
The engineer held up his hands and stepped to the doorway of the engine when he saw the gang of outlaws riding toward him with guns drawn. He stood there until Berlin reined to a halt next to the engine.
You gents are out of luck. We ain't carrying no money nor gold on this trip.
You got us wrong, mister. We ain't gonna rob you. We just want to ride.
While some of the gang tied ropes to the tree and pulled it off the tracks, others went car to car, confiscating weapons and what small amount of money and jewelry the passengers had. Once they had everyone covered, they went to the baggage cars, threw the suitcases and valises out onto the ground, placed a ramp up to the cars, and led their horses onto the train. While they were loading the horses, Berlin had Spotted Dog climb up the telegraph pole near the track and cut the wires to keep anyone in Crested Butte from warning the towns down the line that they were on their way. While Spotted Dog was cutting the wires, Berlin took 4 sticks of dynamite and stuffed them under the tracks behind the train. When the dynamite exploded, the rails were left bent and curled, with 20 feet of track destroyed.
Now won't have to worry about nobody coming after us on this track.
When they had everything loaded, Berlin sent Billy Bartlett up to the engine to tell the engineer to start the train. As it began to slowly move forward, Berlin put all the passengers into one car with a couple of men left to keep them covered.
Where are we going?
I'd like to put a few hundred miles between us and the army. I figure we can ride this train down near Pueblo and get off there. That ought to be far enough to throw them off our trail.
Bob Guthrie was having breakfast the next morning with Waldo Pepper at the boarding house, where he was staying while in Crested Butte. Pepper pulled out his pocket watch.
Looks like your bandits ain't gonna be coming this way after all, Sergeant. Maybe the army men you sent after them from Gladwood Springs got them after all.
Maybe, Sheriff, but it just don't figure.
Well, they had plenty of time to get here by now if they was coming.
You're right about that. Maybe we ought to take a ride out to the men you've got stationed north of town and see if they've seen or heard anything.
If you say so, Sergeant, but I'm beginning to think that this is a waste of time.
They saddled up their horses and rode northward out of town toward the sentries Pepper had placed there. They hadn't traveled more than a few miles before Guthrie slowed his horse and shaded his eyes against bright sunlight.
What's that you see?
Smoke! The damn fools you've got on sentry duty have a fire going.
Well, so what? It's damn cold out here.
If we can see the smoke, Sheriff, the outlaws can too. You think they're dumb enough to ride into an ambush?
Oh, I didn't think of that.
Come on!
When they got to the small rise where the sentries were keeping watch, they found them sitting around a large fire, holding their hands out to keep them warm.
Howdy, Sheriff. We ain't seen hide nor hair of anybody all morning.
Guthrie just shook his head as he turned his horse northward and rode up the trail toward Rifle, followed by Sheriff Pepper. 2 miles from the sentry post, they came upon a collection of horse tracks, still evident in the snow on the trail. The tracks showed where the gang had stopped and milled around for a while. Then the tracks led off the trail cross country to the southwest. Guthrie leaned over his horse's head, his arms crossed on a saddle horn.
Looks like the outlaws saw your sentries and decided to take out cross country, Sheriff.
Damn! There ain't nothing out there for 100 miles except mountains. They try and cross those on horseback in this weather, they're gonna freeze to death for too long.
Guthrie shook his head. It just didn't make sense. The outlaws weren't that stupid. He walked his horse off the trail, following the outlaws' tracks. After 20 yards, he came to the railroad tracks.
Son of a bitch.
What is it?
Which way does the railroad go when it leaves Crested Butte?
Why, it curves off to the southwest about a mile or two out of town.
Come on, Sheriff. I think the outlaws plan to stop the train after it leaves town and use it to get out of the area.
Oh, damn, I hope we're not too late. We had a train go through town yesterday.
When they got back to Crested Butte, a man ran out into the street, waving his arms at them.
Who's that?
It's Sam Wright, the telegraph operator.
Sheriff, the telegraph line's down south of town. I ain't getting no signal at all.
Looks like you was right, Sergeant.
You better get some men together and let's go see if we can fix the wire. And tell the station master to hold the next train when it gets to town. He's gonna have another passenger.
I'll be goddamn.
It was 2 hours later when they came upon the destroyed track.
How long will it take you to get the track repaired?
At least a couple days in this weather.
Maybe we can fix a wire and send a message on down the tracks.
The outlaws are too smart for that. They'll probably stop the train every few hours and cut the wire in a different place. I think our only chance is to work fast to get this track repaired and go after them by train. At least until I can get to a town that has a working telegraph.
I'll get every man in town working on fixing the rails. Maybe we can cut the time down to one day.
I'll contact the station master in town and see if we can get an engine down here that might be able to catch them before they get too far. If we cut all the cars loose, I can make faster time than they can.
I wonder what they're gonna do with all the passengers on that train they stopped.
You probably don't want to know, Sheriff.
The train carrying the outlaws sped through mountain passes, stopping only to take on water when the boiler got low. There was plenty of food, so on the few occasions when they came to small towns, Berlin had the engineer keep the train at full speed through the stations. Once his men were rested up from their long journey on horseback from Rifle to Crested Butte, Berlin decided to do something about the passengers. He had the engineer stop the train on one of the mountain passes, high among the peaks of the Rockies. He pulled his pistol from its holster and walked back to the passenger car, where the civilian prisoners were being kept under watch by the men.
All right, all you men get your belongings together and get off the train.
One of them, a drummer selling the latest in mining tools, stood up, terror in his eyes.
You aren't going to shoot us, are you, mister?
Nope, I'm just going to put you off the train so as my men won't have to spend all their time watching you.
You can't do this to us. We'll all die out there in the wilderness without food or water.
Oh, don't worry, miss. I ain't throwing you women off the train, just the men.
Once the male passengers were all off the car, standing in a group next to the track, train started rolling. Berlin put his pistol back in his holster and walked over to stand before the girl in her teens, sitting next to the woman that had spoken earlier.
You, come with me. I got something to show you up in my car.
Let her go!
Wiley Gottlieb stepped over and pulled her back.
Take it easy, Mama. You're gonna be busy enough back here with us that you won't have to worry none about your little girl.